Support local journalism and enjoy full access to the Green Gazette digital edition with a print subscription. Subscribe today at thegazette.com/subscribe.
Welcome to the Pinning Combination Podcast, High School Edition. I'm KJ Pilcher of the Gazette alongside Dick Briggs, ready to talk a little high school wrestling here in our final prep podcast of 2025 before we head into the second half of the season in January of 2026. Briggsy, kind of a big way to finish off the first half of the season, but the holidays are upon us.
Right. And we're kind of seeing who the stronger teams are around the area here and around the state as well. And, you know, with the results of the Battle of Waterloo and the results from last weekend, doggone it, Minnesota might have a tougher team than Iowa. With Southeast Polk winning the Battle of Waterloo, but losing to the Minnesota team last week. So
right.
I've been sitting on that one all week. That hurts.
You know, hey, I want to ask you about this because I remember kind of going into the holiday break and some of it was kind of fun because Randy Ray would take us to maybe some different places to practice with other teams. I remember going to practice with Lisbon a couple times. Once was actually at Cornell, where we practiced with Lisbon at Cornell's facilities. Mm-hmm. We had a couple teams that would come in or a few wrestlers that would come in and work out during the break. College kids would come back and you'd get to wrestle. You know, I remember Earl Harrison and Jamie Byrne coming back a couple times in the Washington room. For you as a coach, since you've been through this, you went through it for over 30 some years. What was this time for you? So what are these coaches looking at? What are they trying to do here during this couple weeks where you don't have competition?
Well, you're blocked out. There are some dates in the Cedar Rapids School District that we could not be at the building, and so you're blocked out. So I tried to work the schedule around, like, at the last competition of the before the break, if there was any room for a practice, it would be a very fun light practice. Like, we would do I would introduce them to freestyle, just go show the scoring and let them try a little bit, you know, show a move or two, and then have some freestyle matches and scoring. And so that was fun there. We'd also have, at the end of that very short light practice, we would have a pizza party down in the cafeteria. So I'd have the pizzas down there ready to go. And I'd always let the seniors go first. and then it was a scramble after that. and then you're right. We had teams come in, or we went different places. And I mean, through the years, I had Tristan Wurst up there. Mountain was there. And then we had the Twins from Riverside.
The West.
Yeah, Drew
and Bryce and Drew,
which was nicer because at the time I had Brendan Baker and Kyle, and this, so it's perfect for those two to have, you know, the West come in and work out with them. So, you know, just those types of things. I will say this, unfortunately, when Tristan Wirth was up there, I didn't have a heavyweight. This is one of the few years I just didn't have a heavyweight. And he was like a sophomore, I think. And he was already just, you know, it was fun to watch him even then. What an athlete. But we had, you know, Brad Smith would bring some teams over and through the years from Lisbon. So it was very fun. That's just, you know, kind of, and whenever there's another team coming in, there's the pride. It's your room. You got to defend it. Right. That sort of
thing. Right.
And even if it's not your room, if you're stepping into someone else's room, you want to be the guy. So, and it's not like everyone's picking. The kids got along fine and there's anything like that, but it's just on that spoken level of intensity that you bring, you know, when you're training. You don't want to be the guy that looks tired or you know, that sort of thing.
I remember my freshman year, we went up to Cornell in practice with Lisbon. I remember getting absolutely throttled by Robbie Kamerling, who was a state runner-up for Lisbon, I believe that year or the next. But I just remember being a freshman getting absolutely throttled. And then even Brad Smith kind of doing like a little hip toss and putting me ass end over appetite at one time. He doesn't remember that, but I certainly do. I just remember Randy Ray on the drive home kind of giving me a hard time about how much Matt I ended up eating during that. They're like, we were worried you're going to suffocate the way he had you face down so many times. But
yeah. So Lisbon connection here, Noah Padilla, who is assistant coach at Jefferson right now, who's from California. So I was talking to him the other day and I go, and I had no idea he was Kyle's teammate up at Warburg. So I had no idea that this was a connection. His high school coach was C.T. Campbell.
Oh, yeah.
Out in California. What a connection.
I did not realize C.T. had coached out in California.
Yeah.
I know C.T. was in Texas and maybe even Alabama. Remember he C.T. Campbell brought a team to the Clyde Bean duels at one time.
Yeah, CT's quite a character, man. There's an intense guy that I don't think he ever ended up being a state champ. Wasn't he like a runner up? And I'm like,
I don't think he was a state champ.
He was good for sure. Yeah. Good guy too.
Well, obviously the Battle of Waterloo was the big event this this last weekend. You know, no real surprise. You had the four number one seeds in bracket competition. Russell in the championship pool. They went 4-0, or not 4-0, but those four number one seeds swept it. Southeast Polk ended up going 3-0 in the championship pool to win it all. I believe was Indianola second, Don Bosco third, clearing Goldfield Downs fourth. But I know Don Bosco might have been down a little bit. They're missing some guys. But Southeast Polk looked really dominant.
Yeah, they did. I mean, they beat Indianola 40-26 in that meet. It wasn't necessarily the last meet because they do a pool, but and then Indianola beat Don Bosco 42-24. So there's a pretty good separation between those three teams. And Clary and Goldfield Dalles was fourth in that championship pool. And that Don Bosco beat them 37-36. So that was a burner of a meet there. So
anything surprise you about those?
Not really. I Indianola has been a sleeper team to me always. You know, I have relatives that, you know, my sister-in-law and her family grew up there and lived there. And, so I always keep an eye on them, but, I don't know that any other people do that. So they, you know, they're a great homegrown team that, you know, just really seems to always excel, and especially in wrestling. So.
Yeah. You know, they had a strong showing at, West Delaware to start the season. Clint Manny's done a great job there, obviously, taking over for Young. You know, they're a solid team. I think they're ranked number three right now in 3A, behind Southeast Polk and Dowling. So, that's a team that you're going to have to keep an eye out for sure the rest of the season. You know, the rest of it, you know, I think it kind of went maybe true to form for the most part.
Yeah.
You know, I know not all the number two seeds advanced. You know, Linmar knocked off Assumption. Who beat Albernett in the
Pleasant Valley?
Was it Pleasant Valley?
I think it was.
Knocked off Bettendorf.
It was Bettendorf. You're right. Sorry.
Yeah. Pleasant Valley was the number two seed in their duel. And I think that was one that you said. I think maybe last week you kind of mentioned the possibilities of Bettendorf moving on to the finals against Southeast Polk in that D bracket.
And even if I didn't, I did.
But that second place duel, that or the second place bracket, kind of interesting there, where you know Bettendorf ran the table. They went 3-0. They beat Linmar 43-27, PV 34-29, and then Independence 41-29. But then you had kind of a round robin effect where Pleasant Valley, Independence, Linmar all beat each other. PV got second, Indy third, Linmar fourth. But just kind of shows how tight the competition is there among that next level of teams.
Right. And then that Pleasant Valley was who finished second, and Linmar who finished fourth, they actually tied in the duel 36-36. So that went down to criteria. But you're right. Yeah, so that's a toss-up. You know, when that happens, everyone wants to win, but when you do that round robin, then you can all each kind of claim second place.
Yeah, that's right. And I just mentioned the third place pool. Those were the teams that got third in their brackets on Friday. Ankeny came away with a win there. West Delaware was second, Albernett third, North Scott fourth. Ankeny went 3-0, beat North Scott 42-35, Albernett 36-30, and then West Delaware 39-23. West Delaware topped Albernett 36-25. North Scott 42-25, and then Albernett beat North Scott 53-26. Good showing by Ankeny. That kind of surprised me a little bit. And then West Delaware. You know, I think West Delaware is a team might be best suited for duels where kind of the sum of the parts are greater than the individuals.
Right. And that's been that's kind of how West Delaware has been that way, but they've also had those individuals as well. But that's not uncommon for West Delaware. They just have strength in numbers and up and down the line. There's never really a weak spot. You know, they put out a quality wrestler at each weight. So I would mention this because I'm going to mention it again later the setup is this way. They have an 8-team bracket on Friday. So each team wrestles three times. So the wrestler gets three matches there. And then the next day they get put into a pool of four teams where they do a three meet, round robin wrestling the other three teams. So they get three matches on Saturday. So in this tournament, each wrestler, if they wrestle in all of the competitions, gets six total matches. So remember that for later on.
I know there are some really good individual matches throughout you had ranked guys kind of clashing throughout the entire tournament.
Right.
I think one of the interesting ones, Eddie of Southeast Polk versus Schwab of Don Bosco, that kind of stood out, where Woody won pretty handily. One match that I thought was pretty interesting, Lincoln Jip of Bettendorf moved up to heavyweight. Egan Fleshman, just a sophomore for Albernett, battled him to a 3-1 decision. You know, Fleshman has a win over Feuerbach from Solon already this season at heavyweight. Battled right there with Jip, who's going to North Carolina. You know, outstanding opponent. I think that shows a lot about just where Egan Fleshman is as a young guy moving up to heavyweight. I don't know, that just kind of impressed me a little bit that was a match that you know, he was in to the end. Right.
And just to follow up in that match you're talking about with Woody and Schwab, that's what, number one versus number one. Yeah, ranked wrestlers. And then back to the Jip match. I get watch the little bit that I've seen Jip wrestle. He looks like a real physical kind of bully type wrestler. And so, you know, bumping up to heavyweight, that's, you know, when that kind of wrestler comes up, you kind of, you're a little ticked off, you know, what are you doing up at my weight class? You know? So I'm glad to see that he did. I didn't realize he was a sophomore. So that's nice.
Yeah.
Nice to know that.
Yep. Any other ones kind of stand out to you at all?
In pool four, Prairie finished second and City High finished fourth in that pool. And then their duel, Prairie won that 58-10. That was a real, for me, I don't know much about City High this year, but that's a whooping. Now, I don't know if they had their full lineup or anything like that, but that one stood out to me, I guess, a little bit.
I know they're missing, City High's missing Rafael Atuma, their state place winner from last year. He's banged up, but they expect him to come back at 215 after the break, and then King Willie will move up to heavyweight. So, right there, that's just one small little thing we haven't touched on yet so far this season. Atuma missing from the lineup, but we'll see him after the break. There,
okay.
No, this was, you know, for the most part, this was a tournament that kind of went true to form.
Yeah.
You know, I know we mentioned there are a couple threes over twos, but those can always go either way.
Yeah.
But I think this kind of went, kudos to the people seeding teams, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. That's not easy to do either. It's not easy to seed those, especially this early in the season. And they, for the most part, they did a pretty decent job. You know, some people might complain and say, as the eighth seed, I get put into this such and such bracket with the number one seed, whatever, you know. And, right. You know, if we were the sixth seed, we might have had a chance to upset that, you know, those sorts of things. But for the most part, you're right. They did a real nice job seeding it. And did you notice, here's a little cool thing. They had a celebrity at the Battle of Waterloo.
Yes, he did.
All right. I don't know his name. Can you tell me his name off the
Frank Jasper, I believe, is his name.
Okay, Frank Jasper. Listeners, if you can, viewers, if you can come up with that name, you're definitely a wrestling historian.
Yeah, Brian Shute from Vision Quest. If you get a chance, our friend, our colleague Jim Nelson, talked with him a little bit at the Battle of Waterloo ceremonies and stuff the night before everything started last Wednesday. The Courier has some content with that, which is definitely worth a visit. So check that out as well. But yeah, that's obviously that movie is a big deal for wrestling fans, and he was a pretty notable part of that movie, right?
Yes.
The guy that Matthew Modine was trying to hunt down. What are you, crazy?
You're going to make the weight?
Yep.
I hope yep. so. I think he had two lines. You're going to make the weight, and I hope so too. But he was left a mark in my mind.
Yep, for sure. For sure. Well, let's talk a little bit about the girls' tournament there at the Battle of Waterloo. 24 teams, three brackets. That was held on Thursday. Cedar Falls, Osage, and Linmar end up winning their brackets. Cedar Falls, they beat Xavier Bettendorf and then finish it off with a 57-24 win over Decorah to make the championship pool. Decorah got second over Vinton Shelbsburg, beating them in the semis 48-36. And then Vinton Shelbsburg beat Bettendorf for third place there in bracket A. In bracket B, Prairie was the top seed, but Osage knocks them off 45-30 in the finals after beating Crestwood and West Delaware to get there. Prairie with wins over Lake Mills and BCLUW. And Osage advances to the championship pool. And then in pool C, it was the two seed again, Linmar, beating Des Moines Public Schools, then Waverly Shell Rock 59-24, before beating top seeded Mason City 57-24, who would beat Independence in the semis and opened with a win against Charles City. Then in the championship pool, Cedar Falls beat Osage 57-19. Beat Linmar 51-24, then Linmar beat Osage to finish in runner-up there. So Cedar Falls, Linmar, Osage, first through third on the girls' side.
Right, and then in pool, the second pool, Prairie won that. Mason City was second, and Decorah was third in that. Third pool was Waverly, Shell Rock, Vinton, Shelbsburg, and Crestwood. So just to kind of round those out.
Yep. I mean, we have such great, we have some very, very good teams, you know, in Eastern Iowa. You mentioned all those, especially in the MVC with the likes of, Cedar Falls and Linmar, Prairie being, you know, three of those top four teams, to finish at the girls tournament. And what a good start of the season for or this first half of the season for Linmar. They had a real busy weekend, but you know, they were a win away from coming away with a team title.
Right. And so those the Battle of Waterloo for the girls was held on Thursday. They had five duels there, and then they went home. And in the case of some schools, they might not have went home. They might have got a hotel room. Who knows? But, right. But Prairie held their big girls tournament, the Bubba Randles, a tournament with 28 teams. And so Linmar won that. Prairie was second. South Tama third. Williamsburg fourth. Kennedy was fifth. And this is a 28-team tournament.
Wow.
And Western Dubuque was tied for sixth, and Jefferson was eighth. But anyway, so – they wrestled, that's held just on Saturday. So it was Thursday to Saturday. I don't think it's a Friday, Saturday tournament,
no,
but big tournament there. I should know, I've reffed it before, but anyway,
it's a long day.
Yeah. Well, and you, when you have 50 plus, competitions that you're reffing throughout the year, you, they kind of blend in after a while.
True.
So, Linmar, by the way, their first and their champions were Kate Searly, at 115, Chloe Adamson at 120, Divine Akili at 190. Prairie had champs in, they had three champs as well. Marie Burns at 105, Brenna Ruff at 125, and Amelia Reyes at 235. South Tama had two champs, Livin Smith at 110 or 100, Autumn Ellsbury at 170. Kennedy had a champ, Meredith Comp. We got to see her wrestle the other day, and she championed her records after the tournament was 18-6. So she didn't come in with a huge glossy record, but still won with four falls. So good for her. Marion had a champ at 130, Josie Logan, and Benton Community had a champ, Lena DeMoss, at 145. So a lot of area champs in that very difficult tournament.
Yeah, DeMoss down to 145, head wrestled 55 and 70 in previous seasons. Lizzie Wolf from Benton Community, her teammate, up to 155. So they've kind of switched a little bit and coming away with a win. You know, the one set you mentioned, Autumn Ellsbury, and she had kind of a tough loss to Anastasia Simon at the Donnybrook, I believe, but she's really, and I think she suffered a second loss at the Donnybrook, but you know, she's a state champ for South Tama and battled back, and that was a loaded that was a loaded bracket there to 170. You know, you had Addison Bowman getting third, Aurora Lloyd of Linmar fourth, Ava Fab of Western Dubuque, the runner-up. But Macy Peterson finished fifth from Burlington. She finished sixth at state last year. So here, that tells you a little bit about how deep the bracket is when they're only finishing one spot higher than they did at state the year before. So definitely a really strong field there at Prairie.
Right. With Ellsbury, just a quick side note. I was reffing the South Tama youth tournament that's a day after the boys' state tournament. So they always bring in their state qualifier boys and their state medalist boys, and then they're same with the girls, and introduce them to the kids in a short little break there. And so they introduced Autumn last year, and I got to meet her and work with her. You know, she's working a table, a real nice young lady.
Also want to mention a couple runners up. You know, I think you mentioned Brielle Park from Linmar, but Kennedy had you mentioned Comp, but they had a runner up in Jocelyn Stricker at 190. And then Serenity Dawkins of Cedar Rapids, Washington, might be the highest finisher. Highest finish in a tournament that Washington has had in the short time they've had a girls program. So that seemed a little noteworthy.
Absolutely.
To me, Olivia Hollum as well for Kennedy, finishing second at 120, as well as Mary Angelus at 110. So good showings there overall. So. Yeah. Now, you know, you mentioned that you officiated this tournament in the past, and you talked a little bit about kind of how, you know, you've done quite a few. That kind of leads into the topic that you have for teeing it up with Briggs this week, our final one of 2025.
Right. So this is almost more of a public service announcement, but so it starts out with this. In September, I had hip replacement surgery. So that meant I wasn't going to be able to officiate. I blocked off all of my dates until after January 1st. But last week on Thursday, the weather was bad and a lot of teams meets got canceled. So one of the officials that was working the Xavier meet on Thursday, that meet got bumped to Friday. And so he was already working the Marion JV on Friday. So now he's booked for two. And he calls and says, Briggsy says, can you help me out? And I said, yeah, I'm ready to go. I can do that. So I went over and did on Friday, the Marion JV meet. Well, my reason for bringing that up is he contacts Adam, and Adam's the guy that assigns all of the competition or the refereeing dates and such. And so on Friday night, when I'm done officiating, I look at my phone and Adam has already sent me a request to they call them SOSs because they're so late, you know, a request on Monday, which I did it. I refed at Vinton-Shelsburg and a junior varsity tournament. And then Tuesday I did a varsity dual triangular down at Riverside. And then I did again on Saturday. I got a call on Saturday morning to work Saturday morning. Oh, it's like 5 minutes before the meet started up at North Lynn. But my point for bringing this up is what I'm teeing it up with. I'm happy to do that, but that just shows you how desperate and how much we are in need of officials, and particularly young officials. And I'm almost begging, but I implore anyone that's vaguely interested to at least contact me. I can get you, I can steer you the right direction and get you started on that. And I would say this also to parents, to coaches, to fans up in the stands, be kind. Yeah. Referees aren't perfect. They're going to make a mistake here. They're not trying to. They have the best interests of the wrestlers in mind, and they want to get it right. And a lot of them work their fannies off to do that. But if something doesn't go your way, or maybe even it could have gone either way and you get chirping, I beg you, take it easy on them, because pretty soon you will not have officials. The officiating crew right now is getting old. And it's, you know, who knows how many more years I'm going to do it. I don't know. Maybe this is it for all I know. But, so let's help cultivate new officials to the program. And that goes beyond wrestling. I'm sure that's the case in a lot of different sports. So there's my tee it up with Briggs today.
Well, and I'll just follow up by saying, if you're watching this and you go, oh, they'll never get to that point where they'll have to cancel meets. We've seen it in football already. We've seen where they've canceled games because they don't have officials, enough officials to go around. We've seen to where they've had to extend week to where you have eight player games on Thursday nights because they don't have enough officials to spread out over those games on Friday. So they can do Thursday, Friday games because they just don't have enough to have everything on Friday night. So you bring up a great point to be a little understanding to the people out there, because I know very few people that have ever taken a mat, taken a field, taken the court, wanting to do a bad job or not do the best job possible. You know, you may not like somebody, you may not like the way they call something, or officials can be wrong. They know that, but they're out there doing the best they can. And without them, you don't have competition.
Right.
It's just a fact.
And you also understand that there's so many different angles. So that the angle that you're at might be able to see, I'll just say, a lock hands. You know, you see a lock hands call, whereas the official might be behind, you know, and not be able to see that right away, or just pick up, you know, a situation or whatever. And so they're seeing something different than you are, and right. They have to, and you know, and a lot of times your eyes are scanning, you're looking at the edge of the mat, you're looking at the hands, where the position is there, you're looking at the feet, where they are there, you know, and so you're just scanning all sorts of things. So it makes it difficult there. I do know that I've heard that some of these, first-year officials are being required, or not required, but they're being requested to work varsity duels, which is not really very fair for them. They're trying to get themselves, to improve themselves. They're just learning, and now they're thrown into a varsity duel situation. That's not good. So, again, if anyone wants to become an official, I'd help you for sure.
Well, hopefully, and I know we can use volunteers for a lot of different things, but boy, being able to improve those numbers for officials. I mean, I think the Regina tournament I was at on Saturday had two mats and three officials the entire day.
Oh.
So it was just a constant, you know, nobody was off the floor, so to speak. Mm-hmm. You know, and then when we got to the finals, it was two officials on the championship mat, one on the third place mat. And for an hour and a half, it was constantly, you know, they were doing something, no breaks. And that's tough.
Yeah. And honestly, 3-on-2 is ideal. Many times it's less than that. It's like the last Saturday when they called me, it was 7 officials on 6 mats.
Oh, geez.
So they called me and I hustled up there and helped them through the junior varsity portion of it. And then they were fine. Then they had 6 officials on formats. So you want 3-on-2 is doable. And that's, you know, probably as good as it's going to get for you.
Yeah. And that's still kind of
even then.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think I asked Shea Stamp, and he said the tournament lasted, started at 8:30, and then they finished at 4:00, I think he said. So that's a long day. But, you know, you can make some good spending money. You could, you know, you're not going to become rich or anything, but, you know, you get paid, obviously. And so you can make some money to buy some Christmas gifts, right?
Yeah, right. For sure.
One last thing, state does have a mentoring program. So if you're a beginning official, they'll have someone come and help mentor you and talk you through in mechanics and calls and positioning and that sort of thing.
Cool. Well, I mentioned the officiating down at Regina. I was down there to actually cover the duel. It was a really fun competition, a really fun team race there. You had Woodbury Central, who was came all the way over from Northwest Iowa to compete. I know they've done that in the past, and they were at Regina. You had Lisbon there as well. That went down pretty much to the last couple weight classes, and Lisbon came away with a team title, 196 to 195 over Woodbury Central. I tell you what, that was fun to watch play out. So many things kind of went down. The 175-pound match ended up being kind of what sealed it for Lisbon. Caleb Brown, Lisbon's 175-pounder, got a pin over Maverick Joy of Woodbury Central. That if he doesn't get a pin, you know, if he doesn't get any bonus points, Woodbury Central ends up winning that. If they reverse it, Woodbury Central wins, so Caleb Brown coming through, and talked to Aaron Helmrich a little bit about that. And he reminded me last year during the Lisbon duels, it was Caleb Brown with a big pin that helped Lisbon knock off Mount Vernon, rivalry duel there in January. So he's done that before and came through again. I'm pretty sure he won the Mount Vernon tournament the week before. So Caleb Brown wrestling really well here, two titles the last 2 weeks for Lisbon. Cade Happel, Kyler Happel, and Carter Gadberry also winning titles for Lisbon. The interesting thing for Cade Happel, he got a pin in 48 seconds over Tacoma Thompson of MFL in the finals. That was his 100th career win. So another – stop me if you've heard this. You've got a Happel from Lisbon with 100 career wins.
I've heard that name before, yeah.
a lot of wins there for that family, obviously. And, you know, he looked dominant in his performance there for the Lions. And, of course, we mentioned the Kyler Happel as well. Winning the round robin at 106 for them. If you get a chance, the Gazette.com, the tournament story leads off with Cooper Gates of West Branch. I believe he's up to fifth in the class 2A rankings. You know, he was somebody that he's really made some strides. He's 16-1, hasn't lost to an Iowa opponent yet. This season, he's off to a great start. You know, he was he's somebody that's been fueled by the finishes of the past, and it's really motivated him to be his best here his senior year. You know, save the best for last a little bit. He was eighth as a freshman admitted he came in as a sophomore and was maybe a little too cocky and ended up not placing. Then he was seventh last year, even though he wrestled, like Andrew Knacht, a one score match in the quarterfinals, ended up seventh. But, you know, even though he was better, it just did not set well with him because he knew he was better than that and knew he was a top three kind of guy. Now he's got his focus set on being a Saturday night guy, right? Being in the finals, going for a title. He had a 10-2 major decision in the finals to win a 165-pound match. So make sure to go to gazette.com to see that, the story on Cooper Gates and the rest of the tournament. A couple other finals results that really kind of stand out. One, Gates' teammate, Ethan Humphrey, he had a major decision over Lisbon's Kale Stricker in a battle of ranked wrestlers. And then Owen Mankey, the heavyweight for Sigourney Kyoto, he stayed unbeaten. He beat, I believe, Howes is ranked as high as two in Class 1A, but Mankey with a 7-1 decision over Will Howes of MFL. A quality win there for the Sigourney Kyoto heavyweight and him staying undefeated so far this season. So big win for him as well.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
I just noticed that I hadn't noticed this before. I was looking at the Central DeWitt results, which had a team of 15 team tournament there, and West Liberty won that. They had three champions, and one of their champions at 113's name is Caleb Brown. How about that, huh? We just talked about Caleb Brown from Lisbon.
Now, Caleb Brown for doing double duty at two different
ones. And he's incognito because this Caleb is spelled with a K instead of a C.
Oh, okay. Yep. There's the difference.
That's right.
That's how you get away with it, right? You just have to change the spelling of the name. So
change the first letter, right? So I'll follow up with this. West Liberty had, they were first with 192. Wilton was second, 188. Davenport North was third. Jefferson was fourth. They were a point and a half out of third. So West Liberty had three champs, Brown, like we mentioned, Isaac Argon at 126 and Landon Wainwright at 175. Wilton had four champs. You'll recognize this name, Mason Shirk at 132.
Yep.
Sure. Liam Adelfinger, didn't he have a huge upset at state a couple of years ago?
Mm-hmm.
At 138. And then Gabe beat Schwab, I think, in the finals, didn't he?
Yep.
And then Gabe Brisker, 150. And then Gatlin Rogers. I like that. Gatlin, neat first name. Champion at 215. Jefferson had a champion, Zaid Igrim at 120. He's a nephew of my state champion, Ali Igrim.
Oh, yeah.
CPU also had a champion in Jackson McGonigal at 106. So that's the Central DeWitt tournament.
I'll just want to add one quick thing about the Regina tournament and what's coming up here at thegazette.com, our weekly notes and feature. Regina has a new head coach this year, and I think you'll recognize the last name, Nelson. It's Nelson Brands, the former Iowa City West three-time state champ. Still, I believe, the only four-time outstanding wrestler at the Mississippi Valley Conference Super Meet. Won it all 4 years in high school. Not even Jay Borschel or any of those guys, Joey Slayton, Nate Moore, none of them were OWs for all 4 years, but Nelson Brands was, and of course he was an All-American in Iowa. The son of Terry Brands, the nephew of Tom Brands, wrestled for Mark Ryland. He's the new head coach at Regina, and I tell you what, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw some big things there. He's got a nice staff with Kyle Biscaglia, former UNI wrestler, Tanner Schultz, who's from Marion, Stephen Dahl, who is his training partner at Iowa. I tell you what, if you watch him, you really see the joy and the fun that he's having as a coach. So I talked to him a little bit about his coaching endeavor. Check that out at thegazette.com tonight and tomorrow. You mentioned North Lynn, kind of getting the call to help out there. Of course, North Lynn had their home tournament, the Lynx Invitational, and they came away with a team title within their home tournament. Tell you what, there's been a little bit of a resurrection with the North Lynn program this season. They're wrestling really well. They've really climbed the rankings. They scored 189.5 points in the team race, 31 more than Columbus Community. They had five finalists and had titles from 157-pounder Tate Woods and 190-pounder Jacoby Payton. Linmar, their JV was there, and they actually had a champ at 120. Jaden Gallagher came away with a win. Cascade had two champs, and Tate and Honda and Bryce Carroll at 126 and 144. Dyersville Beckman, speaking of Cascade, Dyersville, that's always a rivalry, usually in baseball for sure. But Beckman also had two champs. Preston Hunter continues his really strong start at 150. Cody Hageman won at 175. And then Tipton's Max Lashmit at 165. And Mid Prairie's Tommy Miller at 215 also won titles there at North Lynn.
I'll add a special note to Cedar Rapids, Washington had a runner-up at heavyweight, Willie Davis. So always good to see the Warriors add to that as well.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And that's a nice little tournament up there at North Lynn. Kudos to the Lynx for what they've done so far this season. Really good first half for them. The Don Miller Invitational was hosted by Fort Dodge this week as well. I know we've talked about Western Dubuque a couple times, and we're like, hey, that's a team need to keep an eye on. Decorah, I had big expectations out of Decorah coming into this season, but boy, they just keep getting stronger and stronger. They won the team title there at Fort Dodge. They had 217.5 points, 41 ahead of runner-up Iowa City West. They had champions in Will Larson at 138, Gavin Carolyn at 144, Gavin Knutson at 157, and William Fullhart at 165. I tell you what, Decorah's going to make some noise in Class 2A.
Yeah, I think so, and that was good of you to make that call early on in the season because I – it brought attention to me, and I agree. They're going to be a. We'll see how that works out. It's tournament time.
Yeah, they had seven in the finals overall. So, that was a pretty decent field when you think Fort Dodge, Iowa City West being a part of that up there. Speaking of Iowa City West, they had three champions in Diego Roberti at 113, Alexander Pierce at 126. And Campbell Janis at 175. Pierce, a three-time state finalist, state champ as a freshman. He's 14-0 this season, kind of bouncing between 120 and 126. He had two technical falls and a pin on his way to a title there. I tell you what, Iowa City West, they're a team – they've got some real veteran wrestlers. You got Pierce, Accomplished, Matthew Tron, Campbell Janis, I think Charlie Barnhouse, their heavyweight Stitt. Got second to Drashawn Ross, who wouldn't. Then you've got these younger guys coming in, Diego Roberti, Blessed Woods, Owen Cothey, I think those two also got second as well as Stitt. They're kind of merging. And I know talking to Nate Moore at the beginning of the season, it was like, we've got some young guys with potential, but we'll see how it works out. I think he's got to be pretty happy with how things have come together here the first half of the season.
Yeah, I would agree. I'm going to follow up on your Decora comment.
Oh, sure.
Say that in 2A, that's pretty loaded, man. That's going to be a heck of a race. Because with Hupke Productions has EBF number one, Clarion Goldfield Downs number two, Alburnett three, Assumption four, Wilton five, West Burlington Notre Dame six, Osage seventh, Decora eighth. And I'm like, I don't know how Decora, who they're going to climb over there, maybe one or two or more. But those are some solid, solid teams. And then, of course, Denver is at 9 and then Pennant's at 10. I mean, 2A is just, I don't know, KJ, it's going to be fun to watch it.
It's loaded for sure.
I'm sorry, I kind of got diverted from your question, but that was just, it's like screaming at me right there. And I got, man, so Decora can do it for sure, but it's not an easy climb.
No. No, and you see that shuffle of teams between 1A and 2A and everything, and it's really made a competitive and a tough class 2A this season, hasn't it?
Right. Yes, and you saw EBF last week. EBF, by the way, won the Fort Madison two-day tournament that had 24 teams, and they won it handily by over 100 points. 468.5 to second was Hampstead at 357. CCA was third. Burlington Notre Dame was fourth. Kennedy was fifth. And Solon was sixth. Now, remember when I brought up that they wrestled six matches at the Battle of Waterloo in 2 days? So
yeah.
in this tournament, they wrestle five matches on Friday night, a full bracket, if the bracket's full, sorry. And then they wrestle four matches on Saturday. So they get nine matches in. Honestly, I think that's too much.
Too many.
Yeah. So that's why I brought that up. Nine matches at Fort Madison. That can beat your team up.
Oh, for sure. You need a break now.
Right. But back to my original point with EBF is the number one ranked 2A team, according to Hupke Wrestling Productions. And then we had Clarion Goldfield Dallas was in there. And so each of those were tournament winners or Clarion Goldfield Dallas was in that championship bracket at the Battle of Waterloo. What were they? Let's see. Where were they this week?
Yeah. They're in the championship.
They got
fourth.
Fourth. Yeah. So, I mean, so there are some great teams in 2A. It's going to be fun.
Oh, for sure. And of course you mentioned, the Fort Madison tournament. Just want to mention that Solon had two champs, and Anderson Osgood at 106 and Lucas Feuerbach at heavyweight. Benton Community had a champ in Elias Bischke at 157. And again, Kennedy's, we've seen this before. They're two heavyweights. Anthony Keys and Jaheim Wright finished second and third in this tournament. I believe they did the same thing at the Keith Young the first weekend of the season. So,
right. The difference on this was that they wrestled each other.
Oh, really?
Keys did beat Wright in the earlier round, but then Wright wrestled back to third. And and one note about Feuerbach, he won with six falls and a technical fall. He had two buys evidently. So he had seven matches. Six of them were fall and one was technical fall. That guy's on a roll. He's tough.
Definitely. Returning state finalist from a year ago. So, you know, he's really focused to take that next step.
Yep.
All right. Any final thoughts here as we close things up, before the start of the new year?
Lot to cover last weekend, and I think we got a couple mentioned here anyway, most of it. So good job.
Yep. So any big plans for the holidays or any upcoming New Year's resolutions that you have in store?
Well, it's funny you should mention that. Nothing big right away. Family will be here. Kyle is back from North Carolina, so he's back. Matter of fact, during this podcast, he is putting on a little – he had a one-on-one with a wrestler, and actually in the same room was Ali Agram with Zayd, I believe. So kind of a session that you know, he likes to do that, come back and kind of do a one-on-one or whatever with people. So it keeps him connected somewhat to the sport.
Awesome. Well, hey, I just want to thank everybody. I mentioned this in our college edition as well. We'd like to thank you so much for the support, for watching us. It really makes our day when we run into people while covering a duel or working a tournament. When you say how much you watch it and you enjoy the Pinning Combination podcast. Thank you for the support over this 2025. We plan to continue working hard to bring wrestling to you and widen the spotlight on a great sport and the athletes that compete in it for 2026. So thank you very much for following us. We wish you a happy holiday and happy new year as well. Mm-hmm. And as always, I'm going to turn it over to Dick Briggs to send us out. Thanks everybody for watching, and we'll see you in 2026.
Let's keep wrestling on the move.
We open conversations. Let's start yours. Reach the Gazette's advertising team at advertising@thegazette.com.